So, welcome everyone to Electronic Talks, episode 12. Today we have a very special guest. He's an author of several books with poetry, but he has also released two novels that you can see behind us here in the background. It's none other than Elis Montverde Bourreau. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a bit cold. I've been outside at Skansen, this closed zoo in Stockholm.
Wow.
So I'm a bit cold, but it's nice and warm down here in this basement.
Nice to hear. What were you doing at the zoo?
I did an interview and a reading for Swedish television.
Okay.
From my new book, and read some poems on an empty stage. It felt peculiar, but it felt nice.
Excellent. Yeah, because your new book is about to come out. 6 juni och solen. 6 June and the Sun. Would that be correct?
Yeah, I guess you would translate it that way. Yeah, 6th of June and the Sun. Yeah, it's coming out in a couple of days, I think, or any day now. It feels good to be back with some new poems that's like completely new and fresh. And it felt good to read them out loud because I haven't been doing any readings, of course, this year.
Yeah. No. And mentioning the title, you know, you mentioned the sun, and the sun has been prevalent a lot in your previous writing as well. Could you explain your relationship a little bit to the sun and why it's important to you?
Yeah, it's a good question. Because like on the surface, like maybe it sounds really shallow to be obsessed with the sun, you know, because it's there for everybody, and it's like without the sun we will all be dead, because you know, it's a bit banal maybe, but for me it has like a lot of meanings. I think a lot of my earlier stuff were like about radiation and light in different kind of aspects. And like I write a lot in my earlier books about when I grew up, I had cancer, so I suffered from a type of leukemia, and radiation was a part of the what do you say? Yeah, to get better, they had to put these beams in my head and my spine, and that was something in retrospect that I felt like this is kind of violent, but this is also beautiful and light at the same time,
yeah,
as the sun, you know. So as a symbol, it felt good to write about, and I've been continuing to do it, and maybe now more than ever in this book. Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah,
that's great. I do agree with you. I mean, it might seem superficial at first, but there's a lot to read into it.
Yeah, and you know, this picture there, when you're a kid, you draw pictures of the sun maybe, and then you put sunglasses on to the sun's face, and you give the sun a happy face, and that was a picture that got in my head, like felt such a funny picture to give the sun its own sunglasses, because like there's no other sun than the sun for the sun. So I felt that was inspiring to write about. Yeah,
definitely. And not to go too deep into it, but also like the 6th of June, why was that a part of it?
Yeah, it's of course, it's for those who don't know that, it's Sweden's national day, or what do you call it?
Yeah.
And I at first I was inspired by, there's this song by the American band Galaxy 500. They made a song in the 90s called 4th of July.
Yeah.
Like about celebrating America's National Day, but not really celebrating it. Just like, I stayed at home at the 4th of July, and I was depressed, and I didn't go out and see the fireworks and stuff like that. And I wanted to make my own like version of that in this book. So I took this symbol for maybe like nationalism and crazy things like that, and I tried to use that in this book in a depressive and sad and maybe tragic comical way. And the sun also like went into that mix, but it's about a lot of different stuff as well. Yeah. It's like, but those are the main themes, and that that's why I chose to choose that title.
Would you say that you know, the book came out of some kind of depressive state, or would it, what would you say?
Both, like depression and euphoria, I will say, in, at the same time, or more like I feel like I, as a person and also as an, a writer, I tend to go between like very, like the contrast is very big in my practice between like some days I hate myself, some days I love myself and my life, and there's almost never something in between. So I wanted to get that in there, those mixed, almost schizophrenic states of minds.
Yeah.
Or something, I think. But I wouldn't call myself depressed or anything. I have a wonderful life and a wonderful wife, and I got a small kid the other month, or my daughter, she's turning 3 months this Monday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm in a new state of my life now.
How is it feeling for you?
It feels surreal, but really good to be a father and to have a small family. It's something that I wanted, and I feel more rooted now, I would say. And it felt good to have like this book, and everything was finished like way before,
right?
Of course. So now I don't have to work. I can just sit at home with my baby girl and hope that this is going to give me some kind of money so I can write a new book in like peace at home about something else.
Yes. Because is that your plan usually, to maybe every 2 years release a novel and between do a book with poems? Or?
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan now when you say it like that. But I don't think I ever had any plans. And I always say to my wife after I release a new book that like now I'm gonna take it easy, I'm gonna let the next book take time. And she says like, you're just saying that because if I know you right, you're gonna write a new book in the next couple of weeks, like, because I'm so restless,
yeah,
and I can't like control myself. I have to publish myself all the time, and when I don't do it in books, I do it on online.
Yeah.
And I keep nothing secret. For me, the word or the poems are not like holy or should belong in a physical book per se. It can be like just tweets in the middle of the night as well. So if I want to say to you now like that I'm going to write a big novel now the next couple of 10 years or something, and and don't publish anything else.
Yeah.
'Cause that feels like a cool writer thing to do, but I guess of course I'm lying when I'm saying that.
Yeah I understand that. I think it's quite interesting with you being a new father and everything. You've been kind of I don't know how to express it, but maybe a little bit harsh towards children in your writing previously, or you've been experimenting with the role of the child.
You can say that. A lot of my earlier poems and also in the novels, I use maybe there's like this taboo thing like that I agree with in like society, of course. Like you can't be mean to small kids or children or like use them. Of course you can't. Like I'm all for that in life, but maybe in my art and in my poems, because it felt so forbidden to like use this trope, like the kid or the sick child or whatever. And because I also myself was a sick child.
Yeah.
And when I remember when I was a sick child, I would have liked to read more violent, depressive things about that.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's who I'm writing for as well, like sick teenagers out there who's fed up with a false poems about the reality or something.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm, but I wouldn't, I'm much more nicer outside from those poems, of course, in my life. I love kids in a good way.
Evidently so. And another thing regarding, since we've been speaking about your last book, is you've done a print here on a flag of the cover of the book.
Yeah, because the book, it hasn't come from the publisher yet. So I made this flag. I always do that with my, not with my covers, but with every book. I want to have some piece of visual art to go along with it. So I draw this this clown, or I don't know if I should show it more, a little better, but it's kind of a tragic clown figure.
Yeah.
With like blood, tears from his eyes. So it's also a big, shallow symbol for like this tragic comedy that I try to write about. That's life, like.
Yes.
So the clown and the Joker figure is also a character, you could say, in this collection of poems that I can relate to the crying clown. It's an old cliche, but I love it.
Yeah. And you drew this one, right?
Yeah. And that's also it's not a funny story, but if you see my latest novel, that's the green one. It was like an appropriation of an earlier book series, a classical book series.
Yes.
So I was accused for plagiarism that I had stolen the form for that book.
Was that from the old Montaigne essays, right?
The essays that the publishing house Atlantis put out, some essays that I love, like in their classical series in the 80s or something. And I was inspired... I wanted to put that in my book, so I asked Bonnier, who made that, to do some kind of form with that, like a pastiche or something. And then I put this is my friend on the cover, Ivan Johansson, a young artist who made this portrait of himself with a sword in his bed. And I guess in my head, that's not plagiarism; it's more of a pastiche or a homage to the earlier form, because we have the same font, but we have some new elements to it.
Yeah, and the colors are a little bit
like a modern take on that.
I think as a Swede, you relate to that straight away when you see it.
Yeah,
you know?
And that was the point. But then I heard from the original guy who made the original form.
Yeah.
Whose name is Ove Pihl, who's still alive and who I admire, but he was really angry when he saw that, and he wanted to sue not me but my publisher because he thought it was theft.
Yes.
And that made me sad, but I understand him. We have different views maybe on art or pop art or whatever.
Yeah.
But this time I was like, okay, if it's going to be like that, then I have to do everything myself so nobody can accuse me for stealing their art. So that's why I drew this clown.
I see. That makes perfect sense, I think. But I would like to say that, I mean, I think that cover is great. So
yeah, I like it very much. I wouldn't change it. Mm-hmm. But of course I had liked it. Law on my side as well, but I understand. I should have asked him before, and like maybe I should have bought him dinner and a beer and said, like, can I do this pastiche on your great design.
Yeah,
that would have been. I would do that next
that
time.
That would have been
the polite way, the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And seeing, you know, as it references both the graphical form, but also as you say, the essays of Montaigne. Like, what have they meant to you? Would you say?
For that novel, who's about this young woman who, the novel's title, by the way, in English would maybe be "They're eating from your palm, baby," or something.
Yeah.
And it's about a young woman who's isolated herself from the world. And this, I wrote this before the pandemic. It's felt a bit prophetic, but she has only herself and her own company, and she makes up these worlds in her head and with her computer and stuff like that. And during the same time, I read Montaigne, and he was also like isolated in his castle from the world and made up his own worlds in his head, but like a couple of hundred years ago, and created the form essay. Like, I would say he was the first main, the original gangster of essays, Montaigne,
yes.
Shout out. But I was inspired by that, and I let my character to go into a dialogue with him in the end of that book. So that's why. And then I found the essay is when I was in Greece, actually, on a scholarship trip, and I stole the book actually from that apartment in Athens.
I see.
But I can pay for that. So yeah.
It's yeah.
It was like a library.
A
no, I borrowed it.
Yeah.
That's what libraries are for. Yeah.
Definitely.
We'll give it back.
Yeah. You definitely get some references to that and to the Acropolis Museum and other sites from that trip, isn't that?
Yeah, I work like that. I have no imagination. So for that novel, I wrote it 2 weeks in Athens when I was there. I was alone. And I wrote about this person who is alone. And I was like, if she's locked up in her room, something needs to happen. So then she goes out in her computer in different virtual realities. She has this helmet she puts on. And then she goes to the sites that I also went to, because I had to write about what I was seeing myself. And I just wandered around Athens and Acropolis a bit day drunk, and the sun was really hot, and like, so all of that, those things made it into the book. It's very, I like it because it's the only book I've written that has another character than me as like the narrator or the main character.
Yes.
It's the most fiction I've written, but still I wrote about what I was seeing, like from a different perspective.
Yeah, but I think you really get that kind of special ambience, and I think it gives you like a great advantage having done that. I thought that it felt like that book really was like a blossoming of some sorts of going into a more, as you say, you go away from yourself, but in a way you go more extreme into what you've done before as well.
Yeah.
At the same time, right?
Yeah, I think of my novels, I think I found my, like, if the first novel was more of a kind of an auto-fictional diary novel, like a classic first novel in a sense. You're a young person and you write about yourself and your friends and stuff like that. Then that novel felt like, wow, now I found something that I can work with here. And maybe I succeeded with it in a sense. Because I got a lot of poems in it as well in a different forms, and those kind of hybrid forms that I like to read myself. So yeah,
you're really playful in that novel, I think.
I'm happy if that's what you think when you read it. That makes me glad. Yeah,
I think and in some sense, it's, I would say it's very entertaining.
That's
as well.
Also, that's also good. It's crazy.
Yeah, I was laughing a lot when I read it.
Yeah.
So I think it's I think that's the one that gave me the most laughs.
That's nice to hear.
That's in a very positive way.
Yeah, I try to make that character, the main character, who's obsessed also with the artist Cindy Sherman, but you don't really get to know her real name. But I try to make her funny, brilliant, crazy, like megalomaniac, desperate, all in one body.
Yes.
But it's more of a voice than a body, because you don't get to know what she looks like. And that's the point as well, because like she's obsessed with the artist Cindy Sherman, whose whole oeuvre is about manipulating your own self-image. And it's a lot about that. So I think I succeeded in that. I made the theme and the form merge in that sense, and I'm happy about that. But I was a bit disappointed, because I think like a lot of the Swedish literary critics missed a lot of the points in that book, and it felt like it flew, a lot of references flew them like way over their heads. But I'm not gonna sit here and criticize my critics. I'm gonna do that a bit, but I think I have the right to. Yeah,
I think it's, even I felt that like it's filled with so many references. So I was aware that, you know, I picked up on some of them. You know, there's wordplay, there's you know, cultural references and everything, but it's hard to know the references that you possibly miss, of course.
And that's also like it's a point. It's the point in a sense, because those were the kind of books that I loved when I grew up and was this sick teenager finding like alternative literature, who I was like, this is like a big inside thing that I have to like indulge in and like do my research. And it feels like a secret society when you get something and you feel like this is speaking to me. And I was really enjoying to read those kind of books, and I hope that you can get the same feeling when you read this book, and this is something secret, like that I'm in on, because you can get in on it if you want to. You can join the ride.
Exactly. It feels like exploring your work, it does become like kind of a club, that the more you've read, the more you're kind of in on the joke.
Is that a correct description? I would say that, if you've read all the books, there's going to be phrases and wordplay and like that's repeating and like mutating. And and it's going to, like, when I'm done with my days as a writer, be it in 10 years or 5 years or 30 years, and you're going to get something from reading all the books, maybe not necessarily in the right order, but like
it's
all part of a bigger plan, like even this new book, but with the poems, but I would say, if you want to start with something, then this new book that's about to come out is maybe the easiest, most straight, direct poems that you can read and start with, because I try this time to not be so like secret, and like I try to not be so, what do you say, like the intern jokes thing. I try to be more open in this book, so hopefully I will get some new fans and some new haters.
I definitely get the feeling, having read all of those books, that you do have certain obsessions that you like getting back to.
Like, there's, haven't we all?
Very true.
But exactly. And I have.
There's all the meat and all the different kinds of objects that are reoccurring. And I also didn't read them in the chronological order. So like when I read the second novel from 2020, I was like, what's all of this about this woman eating sugar out of a bag? Like, what's the deal with this? And then, you know, when I read one of your earlier books, I kind of got in on the clue on that, you know, where that scene might have come from or inspired, you know, the rest. So I think it's a very fun way of connecting connecting the dots.
Yeah, exactly.
In many ways.
That scene is, yeah, as you mentioned, the woman eating sugar from a bag is like from this Chantal Akerman movie that I write out the reference in Charisma Samhället.
Yes.
And then it occurs again. And I don't even know if that scene actually exists in a Chantal Akerman movie. I love Chantal Akerman, but yes. I haven't seen all her films. But somebody told me about that scene, and I thought, like, this is a beautiful picture in my head, so I want to write about it, and then I want to write about it again and again and again. And so I did. And if somebody can, like, through that, they want to see more Chantal Akerman films or whatever, that's great. Like,
yes, to say. Love Chantal Akerman. Yeah. And I think that's a great segue into a little bit about, there's definitely a lot of cinema references also in your work, which I love because I'm a cinephile myself. And how could we say that? There is one scene also in particular, you mentioned one of my favorite films from the last year, which was Burning, which is this Korean film from Lee Chang-dong, which himself is actually an author in the beginning before he started the filmmaking.
Yeah.
And that was also kind of an entryway into also the theme of the sun in some ways.
Yeah, exactly. It's about, there's a lot of, now I don't remember exactly the storyline there, but aren't there this guy who's burning, what do you call them?
Like some kind of plant houses.
Plant houses, exactly. And then there's this really strong scene when the main character jerks off to the sun, or like he's in his lover's room, but she's not there. And then there's this sunbeams coming in through the windows, and he like in a morbid, like beautiful scene jerks off to the sun. And that was also like a new, very, yeah. I get inspired when I see those pictures, and I want to write like those scenes down myself and see what happens.
Yeah.
If it gets as beautiful on the paper, or if it changes, or if I can change it myself in retrospect or something. But it's some kind of adaptation in reverse, like from the movies to my I steal it to my books, like shamelessly, but I try to, as in the book, like write which movie it is from.
And then you kind of also riff not only on films, but it's also a lot of like TV culture stuff like this.
For me, like pop culture and TV shows and so to speak, shallow media celebrity icons like Paris Hilton or Heidi Klum or whatever. Those has always been as inspiring to me as any old fancy poet. So I try to have everything that I love culturally on the same like pedestal or level, and not to make, like, I'm not afraid of mixing those things together. So of course I'm gonna write about Montagne and Heidi Klum and whatever, on the same page. Like that's for me, that's the only way I can write it. And especially in the poet book Röda Dagar, Red Days, poetry collection, there's a lot of celebrities and celebrity culture in that one. And that was something I wanted to read about myself. So, and I was very interested in like reality TV and stuff like that when I wrote it. So it's always been a big part of my writing, alongside with more fine arts or whatever.
Yes. I think it would be interesting to know a little bit, since you started out in poetry.
Yeah.
And then you've done a couple of novels that does have a lot of poetry in them. And I mean, in one of your books, you say, I mean, quite directly, you say, I'm writing a novel so I can get better pay, basically, or something like that. I'm just referencing that. Like, how was it for you as an author to transpose from poetry to these novel formats, or was there any difference for you?
For me, it was more kind of an experiment to write the first novel. Mm. The Charisma Society, it would be called in English, I guess, who is a paraphrase to Guy Debord and the Citroën. I can't say it in English, but the Société des Spectacles or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Charisma Society, it's called. And that was kind of an experiment because I was writing my poems and I had published two poetry collections and a lot of stuff online. And I was like this cliche of a young poet, poor poet guy in Stockholm, like going to parties and living on like my extra work as an usher at this theater and living on small scholarships. And then I was like, yeah, but okay, I have to write a novel because I have to try that. So I wrote this diary. That turned out to be the first novel. And it's, in a sense, it's like, it feels like cheating to send that in. And I posted it to a bigger publishing house than my poetry collections had been published by. And they were like, yeah, we want to publish this. And I was like, yeah, but do you think it's done? This is just my diary. Should we maybe change something or write more? But they didn't want to change anything. And it made me feel, in retrospect, a bit suspicious. Like, I guess if they had told me, like, cut this out and write more about your relationship to your mother or whatever, I would have done that. Yeah. Because I had so much respect for Bonniers Förlag publishing house, and they were giving me, like, it's not a lot of money, but for me then like 30,000 kroner was a lot of money because I didn't know that I had to pay taxes on them the next year. So I was like, yeah, I do whatever you say, and they were like, yeah, we think it's done, and just got it out there. So I feel happy for that, but also like, I don't know if I have an integrity in my own spine. Like, if they had told me, write it this way, maybe I would have done that. I'm just blessed that they didn't. And now it's out in paperback edition on the same book, but with a new foreword by me.
Excellent.
Where I explain a bit more about the context of where it was written and that. So now it's out on Modernista, who's also publishing the new poetry collection. Yeah.
Excellent.
You have to change publishing houses then and again, because then you can, like a soccer player or something, you can make them pay more if they feel like they're competing about you and your work.
Of course, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, speaking of publishing house, if we could also get into a little bit what you've been doing with the Fame Factory as well, the PDF publishing house, could you call it that?
Yeah, I guess you could. It's a project that's close to my heart, like, because where I come from, like when I started writing internet poetry and like accessible alternative poetry written by young unpublished people were my biggest influences for me. And then I met this poet and writer called Anna Axfors, who's living in Malmö. We met when we were really young and we started to just do creative shit together. And like, we had a blog and we had a podcast, we had everything. We went to on like anarchistic poetry tours and whatever, and we also started this Facebook based PDF publishing house called Fame Factory. And now we published I published a novel by a girl called Anna Nygren, who's a genius. So we published 39 titles, and they're all for like free to download, mm-hmm. and you can read them on your phone or whatever. And it's both like poetry and prose, and it feels good to be able to have that asset. Like if a young unpublished poet wants to get something out there, and they know like I can't pay them, but I can get their work out there. So they have like, for their next script, they can point on that and was like, I have this book published on Fame Factory. Mm-hmm. Stuff. And our goal is to publish 100 titles, and then we're going to quit, I think. So there's quite a lot of books left to publish, and we've been publishing in like 5 years period or something, but we'll get there.
Mm. You said somewhere you wanted to be like your classic series.
Yeah. Yeah, like an alternative canon or classical series, like for a more, in lack of better words, like a punk literature, I would say. So it feels good. We have published some really crazy books there that I love, and by people who's later become quite established mm-hmm. writers, but they published some of their first work there.
Yeah.
And that feels good to say that, like, I published that.
Mm.
And then I also feel like I love a physical book, but for me, internet was really important, and I think a lot of people don't know that there's a lot of good poetry out there mm-hmm. to read whenever for free. It's amazing.
Mm.
But when we have published 100 books, our goal is to make one big physical book with all the 100 PDF books in it, like an object, not to read, but like to put in a museum or something.
That's lovely.
Yeah. So and it's gonna be really, really, really expensive.
Of course.
To pay everything back, because all the other books was for free.
For free.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's a great idea. Yeah. I think.
I hope I live to see that day. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think we all hope that.
Yeah.
And you're mentioning the entryway into poetry. You want to help people getting their stuff out there. And how did that actually happen for you? You know, when you got into poetry, and like, how was your journey before you could publish a physical book, actually?
Like, first I wanted to be a journalist, I think. Like, I had always, like, to take it from the beginning, I grew up with sports and football, mm-hmm. soccer. I played a lot, and I lived for that. And then I got sick and the leukemia thing, and I had to like quit all that. And I had 2 years where I was just alone, and I had to do something else. So I started reading a lot and consuming another type of culture than I had done before. And then I was like, yeah, I want to write. What can I write? I can write about culture, like I can be a journalist. I tried that, but it was so boring to have like the reality and to have that on your shoulders. Like, I have to write about stuff that exists, or like stuff like it really is. I wanted more freedom, and I wanted to get away from the form pressure. Like, so I found poetry quite young, I guess. Like, I was like, you can write crazy looking pages. Like, for example, Harmony Korine made a book when he was really young called A Crack Up at the Race Riots. He talks about it in a classical great letterman interview, I think. And on one page, he had just written one word, which just said Hepburn. And that was like David Letterman, like making fun of, like, this is crazy. Is this really a book? And he was like, yeah, I wanted to write the great American novel with just one word. Mm. And I chose Hepburn or something.
Yes.
And I was like, this is fantastic. And everybody in the audience was like laughing at Harmony Korine. Mm. But I was like laughing with him against that audience. So I wanted to do that. And then I just tried panically to find people who also wrote poetry, and that was hard, but I had internet and I met some collectives that I could like take my way into different scenes and stuff, like a Parasite, and just evolved from that.
Yes.
But that's where it came from, I think.
You felt like, did you feel like a parasite? I'm just saying that because you mentioned that quite often, or that's kind of a theme for you?
Yeah, it's a theme for me, but that's like taking words back.
Yeah.
Like for me, a parasite, when I say it, it's positive. Like
I see.
It's like a thief, a parasite, like in my work, that's like something good and creative and productive. Mm-hmm. So
I see.
Yeah, I think I felt like a parasite in the greatest sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I rewrite history now in my mind, I give myself that power.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you eventually found people to connect with.
And I went to this writing school that's quite classical in Sweden, called Biskops Arne, and I shouldn't lie about that, but I got in on my third try, and when you get in there, it's like a ticket to some contacts and some ways into the publishing industry, like, and you meet people who know people who have emails to the direct inbox to the publishers, so you don't have to go through the big machine that's like sending in your little silly novel, and they're not going to read it. Like you get the tools there.
Yes.
And that was important for me also, I guess. But as I said before, my first book, my first poetry collection, and we continued to doing something moving or touching, or that was published by a really, really small indie press.
Mm-hmm.
So and those people I found like in the music scene. So like there's always as long as you and are like in these subcultural worlds, like they often collide, like. Like this small poetry scene and the small indie scene and whatever, they often merge as well. So that felt good to make my debut with that book on that small label.
Mm.
Yeah, I have them to thank a lot, because when that was out in the world, it was much more easier for me to get my next book out. Of course.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And maybe that was my book who got the best reviews, the first one. And after that, it's just have gone downhill in that sense.
I see.
So I'm hoping I get a revenge with this new poetry collection. We'll see.
Of course. Yeah. We're all hoping.
Yeah.
And it will be super exciting when we have the book in our hands.
Yeah.
What else can people expect from you in the future?
I don't know. I want to like continue to mix and jump like a trickster between like fields in the arts. Like I would like to make. I have made one single, like where a pop single, I call it. Where I call myself a crooner, I sing on it. My dad wrote the lyrics, and the musician Isak Sundström from bands like Skriet and Pascal, he made the music. But I would like to make more music. Like, and when I say that, I can't play any instruments, but I can write lyrics and I can sing. And I think I always dreamt about standing on stage and with a microphone and like singing. So I would like to try to do that. So if somebody sees the plays some kind of instrument, whatever, you can email me and we can collaborate. And I would like to do some more acting as well.
You actually acted in a film recently, didn't
you? Yeah. It's coming to theaters this fall, if mm-hmm. everything goes right, I think. It's an adaptation of a novel called The Schoolmaster Games. Mm-hmm. It's like a Swedish queer fantasy, like a high school movie meets like queer theory and mm-hmm. Mapplethorpe aesthetics, like at this school where everybody is a man and everybody is homosexual. That's like the plot. Mm-hmm. And I play a guy called Shad, who's basically an incel, or like mm-hmm. I don't get any guys and everybody in the class hates me.
Okay.
And it was really fun to do, and I hope I'm gonna get some airtime in it. I haven't seen it yet,
mm-hmm.
but I looked like almost like you know, Jake Gyllenhaal in Donnie Dark or something. I was
see.
Really gloomy,
mm-hmm.
and it suited me and my charisma, I guess. So I would like to do some more acting if that goes well, mm-hmm. or if it goes bad. So that's, I'm open for suggestions in that field as well.
Mm-hmm.
And super I was amazed, like, I had like maybe 10 filming days.
Yeah.
And I thought I was getting really good pay for that.
Uh-huh.
But then I hear like it wasn't that good in the filming world.
Right.
But compared to the world I come from the poetry scene, I'm so happy if I get like more than a beer,
yeah,
and some flowers. Like, yeah. I'm so happy when I get paid. So
yes.
Yeah, that maybe that's the future, getting paid.
Exactly.
I'm hoping. I have a family now to.
You have a newborn child.
Yeah, I must give her food on the table.
Yes, that's always a good argument.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna be better in that department.
That is great.
Yeah.
We'll make sure to follow that. And I mean, so much exciting stuff happening, and especially with a new work of poetry coming out.
Yeah, it feels good.
So thanks for coming, Ellis.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was fun to be here.
Thank you. And that was it for episode 12 of Electronic Talks. If you want to find the work of Ellis, you can see the links below, and we'll reference his new work and also all of his previous novels, so you can go out and buy them. That's it for today, and looking forward to see you next time. Thank you very much.